And I was going to say, by the way, back then you had, you know, one owner per radio station. So there's a lot of competition. The great news for radio talent was if you got fired, you had to cross the street. Same was true when it came to contracts. Everybody started bidding wars all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, shit, there was, I mean, in the heyday of Detroit, 1970, in the 70s, you had ABX, W4, CSX, RIF, you know what I mean? You had four stations right there. So you could start bidding wars and drive up your salary up the ass.
Yeah, it was not uncommon
was
to see you go right next door to the station.
Oh, yeah, and they knew that. So stations, if you were good, they did everything in their power to keep you in their barn, you know?
Yeah, it was when you heard contract renewal or contract expiration, that was a good thing for the guys involved because it just meant they were either going to double their salary where at their current station or they were going to double it going across the street.
Yep, absolutely, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. And it was great, and that's the beauty of it all. And so, but nowadays, as we say, you have one owner. Well, look at Greater Media, where we were working for, they own WRIF and Magic and CSX and of course now Magic has changed and all, but three stations right there, and so what happens is, you know, you lose your job, shit, where are you gonna go? You know, who else is? You go to CSX, you know, well they own that, you know, and it's like over here, well they own that. So it was intended originally by allowing one owner to have multiple stations was supposed to help things, and what it did is it may have helped the ownership, but it fucked over the talent, and everybody knew it. It was like, well, that's that, because now they own you. There is no across the street, and that's been our downfall, you know, for all of us. But the thing of it is that when George and Jim Johnson went across the street to Wheels, then Ken Calvert came from afternoons and went down to mornings, and was doing a morning show with that guy whose name escapes me. And anyway, I started doing stuff with Calvert, and so George gave me my break with Sean and Lance and that sort of thing. Ken Calvert really gave me my big break, for which I'll always, again, be super, super grateful to him, because with Ken Calvert, Mr. Stress was born, Bob Boner, Cliche Brothers, all these acts that I had, and they all became incredibly successful, thank God. And then that led me to be an independent contractor because then now I had something. Yeah. You know, they knew it was contributing to the ratings. They wanted it. Now I had something.
And did you rape him?
And Ken Calvert, it's all his doing. I mean, he gave me the shot, you know. I mean, he put me at the plate. I had to hit the ball, but he put me there.
Which is all you need. That's all you can ask for.
You
got to
get an opportunity.
Give me a shot. Yeah.
Eric's here, by the way, our former intern, now employee of our wonderful Detroit Cast podcast. Eric's sitting here quietly.
Alone, unfortunately. There's not a whole lot of salaries being spread out here.
He's been sitting next to me just pinching the head of his dick for some reason. I don't know if he's got to go to the bathroom or he just likes the sensation. I'm just kidding.
I'm all that, by the way.
All right. So, but I finally got paid because I had something.
Yeah.
So I became an independent contractor and I started doing bits 5 days a week eventually. So, you know,
that's
fantastic.
That's hard, man.
Oh,
to write a bit.
Because I was a computer programmer at the time working for Mishcon. And it was like working on the Affordable Health Care Act, better known as Obamacare, because it's not affordable, but we won't go there, will we? But anyway, we were driving. I mean, like, I think I've told you this before. Shit, I was laying down bits on a micro cassette player at 2 in the morning on the way home from downtown Detroit.
Yeah, so you still had your other job.
Working at the Guardian building on these fucking projects. I'm sitting there trying to write a stress bit for the morning with Ken.
Yeah.
You know, and then I would get home, and then I'd transcribe it off the cassette player to paper.
Did any of them just suck? Cause you
no,
had
they were
nothing.
Pretty good.
Were they
all good, you know? I got to say it, but you remember I was a lot younger then, man.
Yeah, the energy.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I had the energy.
So when
had the energy.
When he finally said,
I
hey,
drank
man,
a lot, too. That
oh,
helped.
Yeah, you did. When he finally said, hey, man, why don't you come on and do these as a contracted employee?
Eventually, I pushed for it. I was just hey, I got to get paid for this, don't you think, Ken?
Yeah. And he was probably, they were probably behind the scenes just going, man, when's this dude going to ask?
We'll
take it for free as long as we can do it.
Absolutely.
But eventually, this motherfucker's going to wise up and ask for some money.
You got it. He's going to take the chance and push, and it worked, you know.
And you had to know. I mean, that was popular for 20 years.
Yeah, and it just reached a point where it's just like,
and still is.
I
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you can still do a stress bit now or a boner bit, and they still do really well.
Yeah, they do well. And at some point, we should fire that up right here on this podcast.
Yeah,
get stress going again and Bob Boner and that
kind
of stuff.
But what did you get paid in those first days per
In the beginning,
month?
I got $100 a bit.
$100 a bit.
$100 a bit.
So $500. You're talking about 85?
Yeah, that would have been. Well, no. At that point, because that was with Ken Calvert, that was 1989.
89, 90. And then 91, you came on with Drew.
With Drew, yeah. Yep. Okay. So
you went from making finally getting a little bit in the business to fucking arriving, my man.
I was, I was making 500 a week, so there you go. That's not bad, you know.
And then a lot more than 500 a week.
Not that much, though. Not that much as compared to Drew. Because you know what they did with me? It's like, oh, you want to be here full time?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, they knew how desperate I was.
Yeah.
You want to quit your job at Mishcon? You don't want to program a computer anymore? You want to come and do radio?
Come on, my man.
I tell you what, how about we pay you $30,000? Whoa, big deal,
Which is a big deal. I remember my first...
Yeah, but that isn't what they paid me. Actually, in the end, my very first paycheck, my first contract, I've never told this to anybody, but was 50 grand. 50 grand is what they paid me for my very first year. 50 grand. No!
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I was... that was enough because as a computer programmer, I was making 41 grand.
Really?
So that was more than I was making at Mishcon. That was huge, you know.
Yeah.
But it was an enormous risk.
Yeah.
I mean, I was walking away from that a steady job, and computers were the place to be. I mean, computers were huge, man. Yeah, still are. And
I think you made the right choice.
And they all were giving me shit too, going, or everyone was bitter, you know, that I knew. They all turned on me, and in fact, there was like that going on anyway. Like, yeah. I had this cunt of a boss, this chick, and she really was. I'm not starting to use the term loosely. I mean, she really was all that you would define that word as. And she hated that I was doing Mr. Stress. She hated that.
Jealous.
Yeah, she hated it. I was doing it really before I was doing those things at 7:30.
Yeah, the workday started.
Before the workday started. And I wasn't screwing around, but she just didn't like the popularity because all day long people go like, oh, you're in Stress and Riff. Yeah.
Yeah, you were getting popular.
She hated that. And what saved me was that the director of information systems of Mishcon, which was the highest position available, was a woman, a bright redheaded lady. And she loved Mr. Stress, and so did her daughter. And that gave me the in, man.
The
big
boss.
There was no higher boss in computers than this gal.
That's awesome.
She loved it, and this cunt knew it.
Oh,
she wanted me out of there. She tried to build a case on me. She gave me a shit project deliberately so I would come in over budget and bust the deadline and everything else,
No way.
On purpose, to build a case on me.
Did they see through it?
Well, yeah, this top dog did, this chick, this woman.
Really?
Yeah, she knew exactly what was going on. So, boy... Did I love it? Did I have a boner when I walked in with my letter of resignation and said, here you go, you fucking cunt. Bam.
Walked out of there with a screaming Bob Boner.
I'm gone. And Mr. Stress, you hate so much. I'm going to do that for a living, you fucking bitch. Oh, it's so great.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, and her fucking fat face just fell. Just thump. Didn't see it coming.
Oh, really?
Thought, well, I was crazy. Yeah. Are you kidding? Radio, those jobs last like a day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
they don't pay for shit.
They don't pay for shit. People are fired every 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You're out of your mind. You know, you're not going to get hired back here. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, they were livid about it. No, I was amazed how few well-wishers I had. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I had some,
that
which
really
was nice.
Doesn't surprise
it really
me.
Really bummed me out, though. People I thought were my buddies and stuff that all of a sudden. But you know what, Mike? It was jealousy. They were just like, oh, Archie,
boy.
Mr.
The guy
Celebrity.
Who knows everything. Thinks he's so smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Totally,
right,
man.
Right.
It's a jealousy thing. No doubt about it.
It was. I wasn't ready for that. I thought, but anyway.
And then that was full time with the morning show then in 91.
That was full time.
That's when you actually officially left that gig.
That's right.
Because that's 41 grand a year in 1990 is a lot of money.
It was a lot of money. That was doing pretty good.
For
that was
sure.
A programmer, system analyst.
What did Trish think at the time? Was she like, Michael?
She was scared to death, but she always supported me, though.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'll say about my wife. She's always behind all my decisions,
Could you imagine the regret if you would have that. I mean, you and Trish's relationship would be dog shit because you would have regretted it every day.
It's one of those things, when you make a decision, if it works out, you're great.
If it doesn't, you're
the biggest idiot. What were you thinking? Yeah. You know,
I think about it every day.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I ask up at 6 a.m. every day this week.
Yeah. So, and the thing of it was originally, I don't know, do people care about all this stuff or should
I continue? Yeah, they do. They love this shit.
You people want to see, I wish we had phones. We could say, like, do you want the rest of the story or are you done with this?
No, Mike, you know what? I hear almost as much as anything else. I have stacks of email from people that love hearing the backstory. Yes. Mm-hmm. They'd love to hear. In fact, there's a couple emails that I remember reading that would love the entire backstory on the start and middle and end of the Drew and Mike show.
Yeah.
And even before that, the time you're talking about right now. So, there's definitely people that love hearing this.
How about we go another 5 minutes with it then?
That's
we'll move
fine.
On
Whatever
to,
you
today's
got,
stuff.
Man. I haven't heard a lot of this stuff.
But I was just going to say that once I got that gig, and that was funny, too, to get that 50 grand, I had to go hire an agent. I didn't have an agent.
Yeah.
And then I found out that everybody keeps agents quiet. You know, nobody would say who their agent was.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Ooh.
It was just like, who represents you? I don't know. And I know you have an agent.
Well,
guys, and a lot of those agents wouldn't take anybody like me.
Why?
You know, you had to be established. You had to be a big act. You had to be a Ken Calvert or a Jim Johnson, or they're like not worth their while. They wanted guys that were making big dollars. And back then, Jim Johnson and George Beyer, at the height of their popularity, they're making $250,000 a year.
Wow.
That was good.
Great
money. Oh, my God, man. That was fucking fantastic. Yeah. In the 80s, $250,000. So big dollars, you know.
In the 80s,
you know?
They were pulling that out of the bank? Wow.
Yep. So that was a lot of money. And the thing of it is, so you had agents that represented guys like that. But with me, you've never done this before.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So I couldn't find an agent, and I finally, I'm trying to remember how, that's another long story. Never mind. You remember Funny Side of the Street, you know, that TV thing I did with Mark Ridley and all that stuff.
Boy, do
and all
I.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Hilarious.
Someday we'll get into that. But the guy that was responsible for that TV production, I had him rep me for a while. That ended up to be nothing but phone calls with him forever.
Ooh.
He wanted to, he had these puppets. Disaster. It's another story.
Oh,
one day I'll tell you about the puppets. But anyways, so I eventually, let's just put it this way. Eventually, one thing led to another, and I had this agent that I thought was a reasonably good entertainment attorney. Really wasn't. I don't think he'd ever done it before.
Was he a lawyer?
Yeah, he was a lawyer. He was an attorney. He was a little guy. He was sort of a Danny DeVito kind of a looking guy, only not as fat.
Yeah.
And he went in there, and I thought that he had it together, and you know. But in the end, I got the 55 grand, so I was happy, and you know. But I had to pay him some cash.
He took his half.
Yeah, but he was a chain smoker, and he always wore like a Detective Columbo coat.
Ooh.
And I thought he was going to have a heart attack every time I saw him. I mean, he was just in the worst shape.
How long did you have him before
Novak? A year
Novak?
For the first contract, and that was it. That was it. And then ultimately, then Novak came along, which was fantastic. And that was because Ken Calvert was very close with Mike Novak, and I was at Oakland Hills. With my brother-in-law, because I was no member there, but my brother-in-law was. And that's when we were in the grill having a couple of beers after a round. And over the table, I saw Ken Calvert, and I went over to say hi to Ken. And he said, oh, and by the way, this is my attorney, Mike Novak. And it was like, bing, 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 because I knew Novak.
Yeah.
Novak gave me his card. It was like, oh.
Yeah, I've arrived.
Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. And ultimately, we would learn about Novak that Mike, even though he had that air that if you don't, you know, if you're not playing with the big leagues, forget it.
Yeah.
He really did take on people that he thought had potential that had nothing. Yeah, he was the best guy.
Yeah, he took Mark
Mike Novak was the most wonderful guy on the planet, you know, one of the greatest, coolest people on the planet.
Awesome.
And unfortunate that he crashed with a fatal heart attack back in January. It's terrible.
Yep.
But he accepted, if he thought that, you know, you had potential and you were a hard worker and he could do things with you and he believed in you, he'd take you.
And he'd take your call,
took a lot of people, absolutely.
He didn't, you know,
music,
bands,
when DJs.
Novak first got, when we first got introduced to him, I'm talking Mark and I, we had been making 12 grand a year. for the Drew and Mike Show. That was our first deal.
Yeah.
We're making 12 grand a year.
12 grand.
Yeah.
And that's something?
Yep, yep. But we were interns before that, and, you know, I think I was making, shit, 10 grand a year or something in Lansing and Kalamazoo. We were making nothing, but then they, I can't remember how this went, but I got asked back to Riff after that station in Kalamazoo folded, and when I came back to Riff, they brought Mark and I in individually and gave us each raises to 18 grand a year with benefits.
Yeah.
Which was all of a sudden, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you find out the second half to that was they fired Rob 5 minutes later. Okay?
Yeah.
So they didn't want us having the chance to, you know, Rob gets shit canned and he goes, come on, boys, you're coming with me. So they gave us raises and benefits and all that shit. And
yeah.
then said, Rob, we need you for a minute, and blew Rob out.
Oh.
And so all of a sudden it was like, here's your show, guys. And,
yeah.
And I remember, you know, you and Drew were just like, okay. and you were more comfortable than Drew was
yep.
because you had been there. We had been there for that 6 months when Drew was out with his
right,
back surgery.
Right, right, right.
So you'd worked with Mark and I for that 6 months.
Exactly.
And Drew hadn't.
Right.
Now,
that's
Drew,
right.
Drew, remember
that's why
me.
He was throwing flags with you guys, and I was like, I'm telling you, they're
all
good
right.
guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was probably, behind the scenes, it was probably you who went to bat for us.
I was selling
originally.
You big time because he was leery. Yeah. And also he knew a big producer that was a friend of his down in
yeah.
Atlanta. That I think he had his eye on,
sure.
you know,
yep.
a guy named Roger that he really liked.
You can't fault anyone
no,
for
no,
that.
No,
you know?
Absolutely not.
Drew's in, you know, I interned with you guys in 95, and that's that period there. And
that was 95, was it?
Yeah, towards the end of 95. and that's where the unpaid intern tag started. Mike
yeah,
the unpaid intern.
Yeah.
So I'm, and there was no other interns, there was no other producers, so it was kind of a, it really was just Rob and you guys and Trudy.
Yeah.
And so I really did get to know you guys back
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
you know, I knew you guys and kind of ran with the crew. So it wasn't like Drew didn't know who I was. But then I was gone for a year or so. And then when I came back, he was still like, oh, God, that last I knew, he was an intern, you know, used when we needed him and stuff. But, you know, shortly thereafter, I mean, you know, you had worked with us and then Drew was on board and it was all fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're making 18 grand a year.
That's and, something.
Yeah. But
that's
then
just how
Novak,
it goes.
Novak, you know, we weren't paying Novak in the beginning.
Right.
Mark and I weren't. You guys were paying him enough.
Yeah.
It was, you know, we were kind of the charity case that came with the territory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you guys would have had to do it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't going to happen.
Fuck no, it wasn't.
Best for all of us. And that, yes. that's not a knock. It's just like, hey, man, you got enough on your plate, you know. But they would have fucked us around forever if they could have.
Yeah.
And most shows in the country, that's what happens. You don't get, you know, it's like, hey, I look out for myself. You get what you can get.
Right.
And
right.
you got producers everywhere making jack shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this, man. The reason Mark and I were there for 17 years is because Drew and Mike took care of their guys, period.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you guys looked after us like nobody, you know, shouldn't have been done probably.
Mm.
Look, you guys looked after us better than anybody else would have.
Yeah, well, and, that's nice. Thank you for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's the truth. Mark will
yeah,
tell
yeah.
the same thing.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? And, yeah,
well,
certainly didn't have to, but.
Thing of it is, oh, and I should add, too, by the way, that, very successful with Ken Calvert and all that. And then Ken, just to fill in the rest of that story, is that once JJ and them were came back and they're on Wheels in the Morning, and Ken Calvert was at Riff, you know, and I was doing Mr. Stress and Bob Boner and all that stuff with him and Lynn Woodison. Then Ken decided to go to Afternoons on Wheels, and I tried to see if I get a move as a co-host with him. That didn't pan out.
Really?
And then he ended up leaving and going to Wheels in the Afternoons, which left Lynn Woodison. This is how Drew and Mike were born, just is where we're going with this. And so I had this popular gig, like I tell you, with Stress Boner and Cliche Brothers and all that stuff. And Ken Calvert now went off to Wheels, and JJ and them were over there, and they're not going to do Stress and Boner because, you know, that was the old Shauna Lance days. That was
sure.
now done with. So there I was, and so I got that agent, right, and I left, and I got the full-time job like we had talked about with the programmer thing and that cunt that, you know, I was able to throw my letter of resignation at. I wish there was a video camera, Ryan. I would love to look at that again and again and again,
yeah.
even today.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, at that point, They had decided to hire me as a co-host, but they didn't know who to put me with. So Lynn Woodison was there, but they wanted one other person. So Lynn was sitting there, and then they went through, and they came up with Drew. So now Jim Pemberton, who is the PD, you know, had this meeting set up at Relic Music Cafe for me to meet Drew. So they flew Drew in, who had this big, bushy beard. Huge beard.
That's hilarious.
he looked like one of the...
one of the Boston Red Sox?
One of the fucking Red Sox, absolutely. And so
weird.
So we met and we were talking and, you know, the three of us. And then Pemberton eventually took off and Drew and I shooting the shit. And then we went out and had gay sex and to get to know one another. And so anyway, and then we started talking on the phone and trying to get to know one another and so forth, so on. So
were really familiar with Detroit. You were a Detroit boy.
Right.
And he was just coming to town. Didn't
right.
know shit.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Born in Chicago.
Coming from
so
Arizona.
So he had that sort of Midwestern feeling. But yeah, he was coming from Arizona
right.
where he lost his gig out there. And the station changed formats and stuff. And before that was Boston. He was working with Peter Zipfel, otherwise known as Zip.
Yeah.
But him and Zip had a falling out. And Zip had some problems. And the two went their separate ways. And so Drew came sans Zip. So,
but Zip was here for a while.
So what happened is Drew came in, met Lynn Woodison, and Lynn Woodison wasn't exactly thrilled. She wasn't happy that, to be honest, she wasn't happy that Ken Calvert left to begin with.
Yeah.
And that upset her a great deal. And she certainly wasn't happy about some guy she didn't know coming in from Arizona.
Right.
You know, named Andrew Lane.
Right.
And so when she met with Drew... She said something about the
she thought she was the big dog, and
yeah,
I love Lynn. Lynn has always been a doll
yeah.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
I really mean that. But
she was
like, who the fuck are these clowns?
Yeah, right.
You
and
know, I'm a big shit in this town, and who the hell is this?
Yeah, and I think she was concerned. Drew was different, doing a whole different kind of a show back then. You know, and,
yeah.
I think she thought it was a little too poppy and all that. And he didn't know Detroit. He wasn't from here. I mean, those are back in the days when Talbert was writing. And if you weren't from here, the idea was in radio in those early days. If you weren't from Detroit, you would never make it.
Yeah.
Never.
And
never.
That was true. That held true for
it really
a long
did.
Time.
It really did.
Yeah.
It really did. It really was true.
Yeah.
And so for me, they had me. So they knew I was born and raised in Royal Oak. So I could be that bridge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so bottom line is that... Lynn didn't have exactly the best meeting with Drew, and Drew walked away from that thinking, boy, I don't know about this. You know, I get it. Now, at the time, I was like, what the fuck? But I get it because from his standpoint, he was going, there's this girl, there's Lynn Woodison and Mike Clark, and they're both have worked together a number of years at Riff, and I'm the odd man out here, and I wonder how this is going to go, and what if they decide to pull some shit and fuck me over and cause me to lose my job and, you know, just do shit to get rid of me.
Yeah.
Not accept me and just, you know, which people do to people.
Yeah.
Hate
yeah.
to say it.
And he was
we had no intention
another...
of that, but, I mean, he was worried of that, and you've seen that in radio.
Yeah.
You know, people resent outsiders and all that.
He was also looking at the time, I remember talking to him about it, he was looking at another show. Like, he wasn't sure that he was coming to Detroit. You know, I think St. Louis and maybe San Diego were other options.
Him and Zip had sat in on St. Louis and had done a show for a week, you know, just sort of an audition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but he really did like the whole Riff thing because he knew it was a heritage station. It was a bit at a gigundous signal.
Yeah.
You know,
and he felt
it was,
like you
it,
guys...
was a, it was number six in the market, too. That was big.
In the country. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was
and
number
six in the country.
Yes.
Yeah. Which was gigantic.
And
now
he,
it's not even the top 10, of course.
He
the
said
population is terrible.
You guys listened and felt that there was some shit for the taking, too.
Mm-hmm,
you know
mm-hmm,
what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
you could listen around the dial in Detroit, and it wasn't like you were going into Howard Stern's backyard
right,
where it was
right.
like, you're fucking good luck.
right.
Good
right,
luck.
Right.
That's not a knock on anybody that was here.
Right.
It just, you know, you listen to it and you go, okay, I can hang with this. I
yeah.
got a fair shot. I got
yeah.
a fair shot to do something here.
Right.
And people will listen. They're not desperately tied to someone that's been there for 10 years and is not
yep.
touchable.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
Drew and Mike became for a long, long time.
Right, for a long
you know
time.
I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
yep. So the thing of it is Drew decided in the interest of self-preservation, he would go back and get Zip because he just didn't like the lay of the land. So he did, and he got Zip. I was really disappointed because I was in as a co-host. I mean, that was a done deal.
No kidding.
Yeah, and it was going to be Drew and I. And Lynn, when they hired Drew, she was so upset that she did one show with Drew. Okay, so Drew was concerned, so he showed up with Zip. Now I became the third person, right, mm-hmm. on the show. So I was bummed out. But also I was happy that I was getting hired into radio. It didn't change my salary that I negotiated for. The contract was signed and done.
So they had to pay you no matter what.
They had to pay me no matter what. So yeah. I was in. But I just wanted that co-host role, man. You know what I mean? I didn't like that third person thing.
Totally.
So, but it was what it was. So he came in with Zip. And they did one show with Lynn Whittison, who just hated it. Mm-hmm. I mean, afterwards she said, you know, it was all potty humor, and it didn't take long before they were talking about tampons. And
yeah, that tampon joke really fucking chapped her ass, man.
Oh, yeah. And so she got really upset, and she just out and quit, you know. So so now you got Drew, Zip, and me.
No woman.
So now there you go. So that's why in the beginning it was Drew and Zip.
And you're the only local guy.
And I'm the only local guy, and I'm in studio as Mr. Stress.
Oh, no.
Because they
really?
Kept me in character when they did this.
And
you know how that goes. I mean, when you're doing a character on the phone, you sound one way. When you're in studio on a microphone,
way different
and not good.
And not easy to do,
maintain for a long time.
That's a lot of stress on your voice.
You know it, like Bobcat Goldthwait. I mean, that's what he goes through.
Yes.
You know, when he's sitting there talking to him, he's very mild-mannered. He
very
talks regular.
Spoken.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's freaky.
And he goes in that thing, then all of a sudden he jacks it up, you know.
Screaming and going nuts. So
that took a lot out of me to try to recreate the voice on microphone. Was really tough, but and if you didn't keep, you know, 200% energy on it, you know, it just sounded like half me, half Stress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyways,
if you listen carefully to really long Mr. Stress bits,
right,
or traffic,
it starts to fade. Well, I got really sloppy with traffic. You know what I mean? I wish that before the show was up, I wish many, many times people would email and go, like, do the old Stress bits, you know, the rants, you know.
Where you're literally hanging the dials going nuts.
Yeah, and the air traffic controllers and dropping
the phone.
Stress,
have a pack of cigarettes.
And I'm so pissed I didn't do it. But, you know, the show was just, it took so, you know, the hours we were keeping, it was just really hard, man. I was getting younger, three or four times a day,
every day.
We were getting home every day at 3 or 4 o'clock, and you know what I mean? And it just got tough to find a time to write it and do it and everything else. But, I wish, whatever. What's done is done. But I really did on Stress Traffic. And half the time it was just like, you know, the show was so freeform that half the time it was like, oh, we're doing traffic here. You know, it was a last minute decision.
Yeah.
So you kind of run in there and half ass it, you know?
Yep.
So, but, there we go. Yeah. With the Stress Traffic, baby. So the thing of it is, man, is that we went for a year with Drew and Zip, along with Mr. Stress, and Zip started having all kinds of problems in his relationship. And he was he had a fiance, and it just wasn't working out. She came to Michigan. She hated Michigan. She wanted out. She wanted to go back to Arizona. Zip kind of he had a hard time with it. He started having an increasingly difficult time focusing on the show and dealing with his romantic problems. And ultimately, it took a toll on him, and he ended up leaving the show in October. That would have been because Drew and I started on the air. My first day on the air was December 8th. It was a Ken Calvert, Lynn Whittison holdover promotion in Jamaica, and it was called Jamaican Me Crazy. And since Calvert went to Wheels and Lynn quit, there that thing was. So my first day on the air was December 8th, 1991, in Jamaica with Drew and Zip.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so upon return from that, so that was December. Okay, so now October of 1992, Peter Zipfeld Zip quit, left, went back to Massachusetts. And by now, Drew and I had developed a lot of chemistry together. We were writing a lot of bits together. We were hitting it off together. And we had a really, really great general manager then. Clint Sly was, we were dating. We were long,
like
yeah,
crazy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Clint Sly was the new GM, which was great. He had those Learjet promotions. Mm-hmm. You know, we were giving away motorcycles, the big hogs, and fucking Clint Slycom's down the hallway of a bank building in a hog ripping down over the carpeting into the Riff studio. Clint Sly was fucking awesome, man. Mm-hmm. I was so bummed when he left. But anyway, he's like, why are we dicking around? Fuck the stress thing. Just become Mike. You know, I loved it. He was impulsive. Just like, you're Mike. Fucking do Mike. All right. The name of the show is Drew and Mike, and it starts Monday. Let's go. And he was that awesome. Kind of guy.
That's great.
And it was like, whoa, all right.
and he had the power to do it.
And he had the power to do it. Like he was so the chairman or vice president of the station.
Yeah, yeah.
He was fantastic.
That's great.
So, and I give a lot of credit to Drew because, poor Drew, you know, your first time on microphone, I mean, I was flipped out. Because now I'm not doing stress. I'm Mike.
Yeah.
So who's Mike?
Oh, yeah, you've got
I started thinking like, well, who's Mike? Because Mike is really stressed.
Right.
It's me.
It's my humor.
It's my humor in the form of stress.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to do stress. So who am I?
Wow, that's funny.
Who am I?
Who am I?
Am I Clark in a cap? So
you must have fucking been like falling into stress every once in a while.
Oh, you got to be careful of that. And also,
you can hear it on very, very, very early Drew and Mike bits.
Oh, yeah.
And you can hear stress in there.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then the first time when I'm talking on the microphone, I was like, ooh, because my voice is coming back to me in the headset.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hated how I sound. It was just like, ugh. So now I started trying to change my voice. And, you know, I didn't want to hear tapes of what I sounded like. I thought it was terrible. And I just freaked out.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to hand it to Drew. For 6 months, that was a real big fight I had on my hands with myself, really.
But everybody goes through that. That's what everybody goes through. Like wearing headphones for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, the guys that do radio well. And because everybody will say the same thing. Oh, it's like me and my buddies in the living room sitting around listening to you guys.
Right.
It reminds me of me and my friends.
Yeah.
And if you do it right and you're good at it, that's what it sounds like. It sounds relaxed and normal and free-flowing. Fucking good luck. It's not easy to do.
And no, it's not.
We've seen a million people. And if you were to just stick that guy in front of a microphone and say, okay, do a show, they more times than not fall on their face.
Absolutely.
Horribly.
You just freak out.
Yeah,
it just happens.
You just would. And the headphones thing that you talk about is big.
So huge.
A lot of times they'll tell you to pull one headphone
off. That's right.
So you can hear your voice.
I tried
that. Never worked for me.
It didn't work for me either. Then it was like, don't use headphones.
Yeah.
Then it was just like, just get rid of the headphones.
Right.
Forget it. Now, I did that. That did help.
That does help.
That was very helpful. But
you can't hear callers, music beds, drops, any of that shit is out the
window. Exactly. Yeah. We weren't doing a lot of that then. So, I mean, we were doing some of that, but not a lot of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Plus, you want the look, man. You're in radio. You want the headphones.
Like you got to have headphones. Yeah. So, but finally, I got over it. But it took a while, and Drew was very patient, and I'm sure from his standpoint, all of a sudden he's working with a guy who's like, what?
He doesn't know how to wear headphones
yet? You're trying to figure out who you're, exactly. I mean, that's okay if you're working in, Marquette? but you're at
Grand
WRIF,
Rapids,
man.
You're
being heard from fucking Flint to beyond Sarnia, all the way down to Toledo, all the way out to fucking Lansing.
Yeah.
You know, driving 50,000 watts off the Channel 7 antenna,
damn,
which is unheard
Cleveland.
Of, would never be approved today, by the way.
Yeah.
Right, you're jumping the lake, you know, under good weather.
Yeah.
All kinds of shit. And you're in Market 6, and it's like, I can't believe how it sounded on headphones.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that too? That what you're hearing when you mentioned it coming back to you in your headphones and hearing your voice like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That processing that radio does.
Mm-hmm.
And riff, you know, riff jocks. They there's a certain sound to them it's amazing the small little box that makes that work.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the engineering closet that gives you that big riff DJ
voice. Big voice,
and
big voices were in big too there for a while.
Yeah,
I mean, it was many years where, you know, if you had the so-called pipes, you know, you were in as a disc jockey. I mean, it wasn't until later on wasn't as much emphasis on it.
No, not and nowadays, not nearly as
now
much.
Now there's no emphasis on it.
but that's, you know, when we were putting this studio here together, I remember Tim specifically was dialing these mics in, and he had kind of dialed in that riff tone. And so these mics early on, you know, because we can do that. We can dial it in like that. But it didn't sound like a podcast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Tim and I were talking about it one day, and he was like, yeah, dude, I turned him down. I was listening to other podcasts, and we just didn't sound right. You know, because he was going for that. You know, when you kick on the headphones, it was like, I'm not going to sound like a riff jock. And then you put the headphones on, you're sitting at that microphone. And you know, because Tim did some shows at Riff. He was a jock there for a little while.
Is that right?
Yeah. And he, I remember him saying, you know, when I put those headphones on for the first time, it was like, there's that sound.
Mm-hmm.
That, I sound like a riff jock. You know, and that massive coming through your speakers voice that everyone gets, and those mics, you know, that you can sit back 3 feet from your microphone and you sound huge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but we pulled these mics down so you don't quite get that effect.
That booming, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. But yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about that throwing you off, because I absolutely see how that happened.
Oh, that's really, really hard to get past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're sidetracked with that, meanwhile, you know, you got to keep track of the conversation. You got to be funny. Mm-hmm. You got to be patched into the show and what's going on.
You have to listen.
And you got to perform,
mm-hmm.
but you're so fucking sidetracked by this enormous difficulty.
Yeah.
You know, and then eventually you get over it, and it took quite a while to get over it. But then finally did. So 6 months with Zip gone, and Drew and I are on our own, and we got through it, and I became relaxed, and
the good thing, though,
you know, we got very successful.
In those early days, though, it was probably to your benefit because nobody took you guys seriously.
Oh, No.
I mean, it's just the way it is in business. Early on, you know, you either stick and work or you don't, and you're gone. You can be gone in a matter of weeks,
absolutely.
Months.
Bob Delbert wrote that famous column.
Yeah.
That Drew and Zip, or is it Zip and Drew? And he predicted, because neither one of them were from here, he refused to acknowledge my existence.
Yeah, don't you love that?
Bob Talbert hated me from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because I never did anything. I never said anything shitty about him.
The humor, you know, that stress and vulnerability was pretty blue and hardcore.
Yeah.
Especially at the time.
Yep. And so he wrote this. And his column, he listed every failed radio show in Detroit. And it went on for his full column. I mean, I couldn't believe how many names, you know, it just went on and on and on.
Yeah.
And then he adds Drew and Zip to the end, you know. It's
what
just
an
like,
asshole.
Wow, what a prick.
Yeah.
But if that's that climate you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
You're absolutely right. There is a feeling that's the thing about Detroit. Detroit is known for, unlike other markets, people, it's not a transient town. It's, you know, people are born and raised here. They stay here. They live their lives out here for whatever reason, but whether it's family, whatever.
In.
Yeah, they vacation. They go up north. That's an oddity to people that aren't from here.
But tourists don't come here. Nobody comes here. Like, you come here to work and live. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Florida's got touristy spots everywhere. A radio station, a show can catch on in a tourist niche market, and work. Whereas Detroit, it's not a transient place.
No, it's not at all. And the thing of it is, and some people that do leave for work opportunities, ultimately do come back, ironically, but they mm-hmm. usually do. But the thing of it is, if you can get past the initial checkout factor, and that's a tough sell, you know, because people are very wary of new shows.
Yeah.
And they're quick to condemn and like, this sucks.
It's the first shot, too.
Yeah.
You're from, where are you from?
Yeah.
Chicago? How would you know?
That's the
first shot they take always.
There was nothing wrong with it until I was about 12 years old and that no-talent ass clown became famous.
Yeah. And if you put in enough time and you're accepted. The beauty of Detroit is that once you're accepted,
they
love you forever, and the loyalty and the devotion is amazing, which is what we have now and is what we always take the opportunity to thank you all once again, you know, for that incredible loyalty and devotion that you've shown to us for 22 years and are continuing to show even now.
Yeah.
And keep it going, by the way, by telling everybody about this podcast, please.
Yeah.